I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on. Hello, everybody. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro here for Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Well, today we're having a big party here. You can hear people in the background. There's all kinds of things going on, but I have a special treat for all of us. I have a group of people here we call the Fam. The Fam are my son Jack and his friends, who are all between 15 and 16 years old. Is that kind of right, everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. And I wanted to bring them on because I wanted you to hear from young American men who happen to be here about what they think about the world, what they think about the world they are going to inherit. How do they see things politically right now? It should be interesting for all of us here on the America Out Loud Radio Network because that's what we talk about. So first, let's go around the room and say hi. You know, Jack Pangaro, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Excellent.
I'm John. I'm doing great.
Very good, John.
I'm Trent, and I'm doing fantastic.
Excellent.
I'm Pat, and I'm doing well.
I'm Noah, and I'm doing pretty good.
I'm Charlie. I'm also doing pretty good.
I'm Brandon. I'm also doing pretty good.
I'm Thomas, and I'm not sick. I'm doing very good.
Oh, that's excellent. I'm glad that you're not sick. So here we have it. This is a large group, right? We're 2, 4, 6. We got 8 people here plus me. So we got 9 around the room. So we're going to have an interesting conversation. If you want to call in, you can call in 732-600-8976. But in the meantime, fellas, here's what I want to know. You are between 16 and 17 years old, 15, 16, 17 years old, and recently we just had an election, and it was an important election. Do you have any understanding of what went on? Is that part of your life? Do you think about the elections, or is that out of your purview yet? Charlie, what do you think?
I haven't really thought about it too much.
It's not something that's part of your everyday, right?
Yeah, no.
Anybody else paying attention? Jack?
I've kept up with it pretty closely, and I think you can definitely tell a lot more people are getting out and voting, which I think is definitely a good thing. The voter enthusiasm was much higher this year in relation to past years.
So you think it was up?
Yeah.
People out there voting. Now, traditionally, midterm elections are really down because there's nothing really important that people see to drag them out. Who votes for a congressman? Who cares about the dog catcher? When it's the president, we get a lot of people to come out. There's a lot of interest, right? But this time around, this was pretty important. You know, midterm elections are really, really important, especially this particular time. John, were you paying attention?
I kind of was. It wasn't like a huge thing to me, but like I saw things here and there. I'm kind of staying up with it, but not as much as I did when it was the presidential.
That's great. Trent?
I definitely heard some stuff about it, but I didn't really pay attention to much.
Okay. Pat?
No, I didn't really pay attention as much as I'd like to. No.
Okay. Any of you other guys?
I didn't really follow that well, but I definitely did notice that there was a lot more like energy with this election than like the previous ones. Mm-hmm. Like I think social media definitely helps it become bigger than like it has in the past. So.
I think that's a great point. All of you are on social media pretty much, right?
Yeah.
You're all that, right. That's an important part of your lives, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's something that didn't really affect me and my generation until recently, but go ahead.
We've also had like tons of political ads, and they've been so repetitive to the point that they're a joke in our school.
They
with,
are.
With Andy Kim, it was constantly said as a joke. So, I mean, I didn't really know much about Andy Kim or Tom MacArthur, but I definitely knew of him because of, like, there was just so much, like, ads and...
Right. There's a lot of attention paid to them, right? Because it was really important. The whole idea of this election was, you know, in these midterms, it determined, you know, which way the Congress would go. Would they go to the Republicans or the Democrats? And the president, President Trump, is a Republican, and if he had a Republican Congress, he can get more things done. And if it went over to the Democrats, they're going to fight with him now. There's going to be all kinds of problems for the next 2 years. So that's really why it was so important. We heard so much about it. It was a big political thing. Now, for guys that aren't paying too much attention, that's okay. You're at a point in life where it doesn't really affect you all that much. But for you guys that do, what did you find different about the tone? Did you find a tone different about how people said things? I know you were saying that the ads were bad. What do you think, John?
It's kind of like, instead of making yourself seem better, almost every single ad or conversation that I saw was, instead of making your agenda seem better, it was slander on the opposite side.
So more attack ads.
Yeah.
Did the attack ads, do you think they work?
I think when both sides are attacking equally, it just makes it seem like there's no good option. Mm-hmm. So
just a lot of noise.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's funny because if you study these things, and as time goes on, you guys will, you'll hear all about it. You'll probably look into it. Is that they say attack ads, everyone hates attack ads. They'll do a survey after every election and say, we hate attack ads. We just want to hear the facts. But the reality is attack ads work. If a guy comes out really strong and says, hey, Trent's a horrible guy. Trent's bad. Trent's rotten. Trent does this. Trent climbs trees and he kills birds. He's really a bad guy. Eventually, people hear that enough and they go, you know what? I wouldn't vote for a guy that kills birds, whether it's true or not. So you can certainly pigeonhole your opponent by attacking them with an effective attack ad. And it kind of, you can put some negative connotations to that person, connotations. Then people are like, oh, I wouldn't vote for that guy. Does anybody here know who the president is?
Yes.
Oh, everybody knows who the president is. Who's the president?
Mr. Donald J. Trump.
Donald J. Trump. Okay. And is he a politician? What do you guys think?
He is now, but he wasn't before he started.
He wasn't before
election.
Okay, he was one of us, really. Even though he's a billionaire, he was just a citizen, right? Mm-hmm. And any one of you guys could run for president of the United States, right? You have to be 35 years old, and you can run for president. This is what I found, and here in Chasing Justice, this is what we found unique about Mr. Trump, is that he wasn't a politician who had been around for years, taking money from all these different groups. He's a billionaire. He didn't need their money. So he simply came out and said things. Now, we know that he says some things that make people uncomfortable, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But has anybody paid attention to how the economy has changed from now to prior to him being president? Has anybody heard anything about it? Jack?
You can definitely tell that there's a lot more jobs. The GDP is really high. It's at record highs for at least the last few years. And I think that's definitely a good thing, mm-hmm. empirically.
Go ahead, Pat. You had something to say.
My grandpa follows him a lot. Mm-hmm. And he says the economy's just been booming since he became president, so...
Right.
Yeah.
And what do you attribute that to? Go ahead.
Well, you see, Patrick, like, it's... You see now, my goodness. I had it in my head, but I was just gonna say, like, that... Like, not only, like, does our grandpa follow Donald Trump, like, basically nearly our family follows him.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you know what? That's true, because in lots of families... The political trends within a family normally follow. Because you know what? You hear from your mom and dad. You hear what they think and believe. And therefore, as you guys, young people, start to hear about politics, you obviously think about what your parents are saying. And you say, oh, well, that's probably the right thing. Because they'll tell you, this guy's crazy, that guy's great. And it goes back and forth. John?
So, like, especially with Donald Trump, he's a billionaire. And, yeah, like, his father before him had a pretty... wealthy company before him, but like he's also a like an economic superpower. So coming into office, he might have not been as good of a politician per se, mm-hmm. but he does know how to work an economy.
Sure.
So that's probably added a lot.
He gets things done, right?
Yeah.
I mean, politicians traditionally will talk about a problem. We have a problem of dogs barking in the street. Let's have a commission to decide what kind of dogs bark in the street. Let's talk about it for 4 or 5 years before we do anything. Trump, as a businessman, he sees a problem. There's dogs barking in the street. Let's find out who owns the dog and tell them to get their dog out of here. And 2 days later, the problem is solved. So it's interesting. Do you guys kind of understand the difference between a liberal and a conservative point of view?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes? Would you find yourselves, who would say they're more conservative? Just raise your hand. Let's see. That's who got the majority of the group. Who's more liberal? And you're in between.
Yeah.
You're right down the middle of the road.
Yeah. I just, like... If there's an election, like, I obviously can't vote, but if there's an election one day down the line that is super partisan and is, like, an ultra-conservative and ultra-liberal, I'm not going to obviously vote for a party. I'm going to vote for who I feel would be better suited for the job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of the political parties.
I think that's clear thinking. You listen to the person, what they have to say, and then you make your choice based on that, what you hear. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Trent.
I'm not very well educated on either side, except for a little bit, just hearing people talk about stuff. So right now, I'm a bit in the middle, mm-hmm. but a bit more towards the conservative side, just mm-hmm. listening to things.
Well, that's great. And you know what? When you look into these things, you got to say to yourself, because you got to, if you listen to the media, they will try and drag you one way or the other. So you got to say to yourself, what is the difference between liberals and conservatives? And when you hear the list of things that each person believes in, you say, well, where do I believe? What do I believe in that? So who believes that the government should be gigantic and take care of everybody? Nobody. No hands going up. Who believes that the government should make sure you have an opportunity to do whatever you want in life and get out of your way? Everybody. That's a very conservative point of way of looking at things. The government is there because our forefathers wrote this Constitution as the way to guide the government. Because prior to the United States government coming into being, like the king or the dictator decided what you did, who you would be, where you would go. The Constitution of the United States says, we the people limit what the government can do. There are certain things that they have to do, like have an army, because we can't have a New Jersey army fight against France if we had to. We have to have a single currency, because we can't have Alabama money and California money. We wouldn't be able to do an economy. So the government has certain things they're supposed to do. Protect our borders, make sure we have a common denominator in money, and make sure we have a court system that functions for everyone, that makes sure everything's that way. The other side, and I don't think people are bad because they're on one side or the other, but I think people who are more on the left side, more liberal side, they see government as the answer to a lot of problems. Hey, if there's a problem and it's not fair, the government should come in and decide who does what. And you can see where that'd be a little bit of a problem, right? Mm-hmm. Does anybody here hate guys who made a lot of money? Hate rich guys? Mm-hmm. No. Chasing justice, people. I think I got winners here. Oh, you don't like the rich guys?
I'm baby. Well, people should be just the way they are, like us.
So if you earn the money, it's your money, right?
Yeah.
So if you earned $100 raking leaves today, and these guys didn't work, should you have to give them some of your money?
Well, no, like,
because, good like, answer, no.
Because, like, I, wait, hold on, like, 25, 50, 75.
That would
like, I'd give them, like, if there were, like, three kids, I'd give them, like, $25 each.
You would?
Just to be fair.
Just to be fair. Okay, would anybody else give away their money?
No. Not unless they...
How about if somebody helped you?
Yeah, then that would, yes. It would only be fair.
Ah, so basically, you earned the money. And if somebody worked for you, you would pay them for their help, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole idea of taxation. We all have to pay taxes, whether we like taxes or not. The purpose of taxes is to make sure that all those things that the government should do are funded. We have to have money to run the government, to build the streets, to run the airports, all those things. But what we don't want is for people to come in and say, you know what? I don't like how much money you make, John. You make too much money. So we're going to take some. We're going to give it to people over here who don't want to make money. Right? I was looking at Charlie, and Charlie's like, hey, man, I make my money. Leave me alone. All right. Did anybody hear about the blue wave? Did you hear about the blue wave in the election? What was it, John?
It was a large percentage of Democrats voting.
They were going to take over, right?
Yeah.
Both houses. And they didn't. Now, traditionally, the party that's in power loses seats in the House and the Senate during the off-year election. It's a funny thing with Americans. We like to have this balance. If one guy is in power, we want to make sure the other side has also got some power so they don't run crazy. So traditionally, every president, except for three in our history, has lost the House or the Senate in the elections, except for a couple. So in this instance, you know, Trump lost 30 seats. Obama lost 60-something seats. And George W. Bush lost 58 seats. So Trump actually lost less seats than previous presidents, but he still lost the House. So now you have the House of Representatives comes up with a law or an idea what they want to do. It has to pass there by majority vote, go to the Senate, who then argues about it, and if they pass it, then it goes to the president, and he signs it. It's a law. But he can veto anything he wants. Then they have to have a bigger majority. Do you guys study this in school? Do they teach these things in school?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do. What kind of a class?
Well, mostly it's just this year, since we're all sophomores, we're taking U.S. history. Mm-hmm. But I think before this year, we didn't really learn much of it.
You didn't get much civics, right? John?
We got, like, the basics on how the government kind of operates, but it was never, like, in-depth on what each house does. We kind of just know that the president can veto things, the House and the Senate makes the laws, and then the Supreme Court has to make sure that the laws fit the Constitution.
That's exactly right. That's what the court is supposed to do. Look at the law that everybody passed and signed and say, is that law constitutional? Now, what Noah, I'm asking you, what you're in U.S. history, right? You take that also.
Mm.
Okay. What do you think the point of view you're getting from school is on U.S. history? Is it good? Is it bad? Were we sinful? Were we, what is it? Or is it neutral? What do you think?
It doesn't really describe anything one way or another. It just states the facts. It only tells you what it is and how it works. There's no opinion. opinions. Like, it doesn't tell you who usually does what.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel your teachers are just teaching the facts? You don't think they're biased one way or another?
Some teachers may be biased, yes.
And what do you mean? But without anybody's name, what do you mean? What's an example of that?
Like, maybe they'll drop hints that they don't like Donald Trump.
Ah. Now, did anybody see the video on TV of the teacher in the middle of a high school class where she pulled out a toy gun, a picture of Trump, and she was shooting the picture? Mm-hmm. You saw that?
Yeah.
And is that right or wrong?
That's not right.
That's absolutely wrong.
That's not right. You're absolutely right. That is wrong. You know what? We have, and I can tell you from my experience, because I'm way many years ahead of you guys, there was always a respect for the office of president, whether you agreed with the president that was in there or not. You always respected the fact he was the president. We don't have that this time around, unless you haven't noticed. Does anybody think, how do you think the president is treated in the news media and TV? Charlie?
There's a lot little more like protests against him and people wanting him out of office.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not a lot of respect for him as a president.
Right.
There would be past presidents.
A lot of aggression.
Towards him?
Yeah.
Does anybody see anything that he's done bad? That he's done bad to people?
I mean, like, sometimes his overuse of social media is, like, a little bit, like, iffy. Like, that's one of the only things that I disagree with what he's doing. Just cause,
so you don't like his tweeting?
Yeah, it's a little bit too much.
It's a little great.
But, like, things that he's done in office, I don't see many things that are...
Right. Now, there's a lot of groups out there that call him a Nazi. You guys studied the Nazis yet?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Does anybody think he's a Nazi?
No.
Not really.
Right, you know what the Nazis did? They were very bad.
Are you kidding me? They, like, exterminated nearly the entire Jewish race in all of Germany.
That's pretty bad stuff. And I don't see Mr. Trump doing anything like that. But the press likes to call him a Nazi, and that's part of turning people against him. So I'm glad you guys have your own opinions, and I really want to thank you for being here on Chasing Justice, because you are going to run the world soon. The generational tide is going to come quicker than you could imagine. You guys are 15, 16, 17. You finish high school. You go through college. You're going to go out into the world. And probably for some of you, before you graduate high school, you'll be able to vote. Definitely you'll be voting in college. And you're going to have to deal with dudes like me who are going to be in my 60s and 70s. But those reins of power get turned over. And if you're not politically active and if you don't have your point of view heard in the proper way, other people are going to be heard, and the world you're going to inherit is going to be different, I think, than what you want. So I want to thank you all for being here on Chasing Justice, and I think, you know what, we'll try and get you guys back, because I like the fam. What are you guys doing today? What's it called?
Friendsgiving.
Friendsgiving. So these guys are all getting together, their moms and dads, everybody brought food, and there's all kinds of stuff here, because you know what? That's part of what we do. We take care of our friends. So we'll see you at the next segment.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice here on Round 2. Ding, ding, ding. Now, it's almost Thanksgiving time, and we have the gentlemen from the neighborhood are all busy catching and cooking their turkeys. Except for my good friend Jim, the contrarian Giordano. Jim is with us here today. We're going to take a couple minutes to learn a little bit more about Jim and have a more of a one-on-one kind of interview and talk about what's going on in the world. Jim, welcome aboard.
Hey, how you doing, Joe?
Very good. I'm glad you're here. This has been an interesting couple of weeks with things going on in our country. One of the things we said we were going to talk about was the blue wave, the Titanic blue wave that was going to wipe our country out. Turned out more like a blue puddle or a blue dribble. What did you see coming? Did you see that coming, or how did you feel about it?
I'll be honest with you, Joe. I could not believe that there was even a blue dribble. When you look at the economy, you look at the successes that this administration has had, both domestically and in foreign affairs, I don't understand how anyone could vote for the party or for the Democrats to take some power back, especially considering that they have nothing to offer.
Right.
I don't know. The only thing they have to offer is to attack Trump and to attack his policies, which have been very successful.
And it's interesting. And this is where, you know, here on Chasing Justice, we don't just react. We like to think about things. If all of us spent more time thinking and trying to understand, we'd be better off. So historically, except for, I think, two or three instances in the history of our country, the party that's in power with the presidency loses seats in the House and the Senate at the midterm elections. That has been attributed to the fact that the American people like the checks and balances of what's going on. No matter how much they like the people in power, they don't want them to have complete power. So what they do is they vote for the opposite party, and they usually lose a lot of seats, and the other party takes over the Congress. So now you have the president on one side, the Congress on the other, and they're supposed to work together now to hear everyone's point of view. That's traditionally what the thinking has been. I think under George Bush the Younger, he actually gained some seats, and there was one other, and I can't think of it at the moment, who actually gained seats at the midterms. So this is not unusual. Now, Obama lost 60-something seats at his midterm, but people weren't happy with him. You know, he was elected because he was unique, because he was something different. He was a historical figure in America, and people were ready for a change after the media beat up Bush for 6 years or 7 years. And Obama was this new, fresh face, and people wanted to believe the things he said. After a while, we realized what he was going to do wasn't going to be good for us, and he lost the House, which gave us balance. That gave our side balance, that he couldn't just run wild as a liberal and do everything they wanted to do. We checked and balanced them. So in this election, Trump actually lost only 30. He lost a historically low number of seats, although he did gain a few in the Senate, which is like a split ticket kind of a thing, which is, I don't understand that, how people do that. This is my long way of going around to say, is it just the complete hatred of Trump that people who voted for him just 2 years ago would go in there and go, well, I'll vote for the Republican senator, but I'm going to vote for the Democrat congressman and take away the momentum that his administration has, that I wanted myself? How do you hurt yourself in those elections?
You brought up a good point. In Arizona, the Republicans won on the governorship, and in most of the important races. However, in the Senate, Sinema, who actually came out with some real weird statements, attacking Arizonians and very left statements, and she wins.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand the mentality. You're right. Saying that there's people are consciously saying, oh, I want to balance out the checks and balances. In the past, whether you liked the Democrats or Republicans or not, they both were pushing forth an agenda that betters America.
Ah, there's
in today's
the
world, there's only one party, I see.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think the Democratic Party needs to get control of itself so they can be that check and balance. Because mm-hmm. I don't want a one-party system. That's dangerous.
Right. And I think you're right. And we've said this here on Chasing Justice many times, is that back in the day, we were all riding in the same direction. We were just choosing different ways to get where we needed to go.
Exactly.
We wanted our country to do well. We wanted jobs. We wanted to be strong. We don't have that today. We have one party that wants to take us towards socialism and weaken us in the world, and the other party who wants to stay more traditional. And that's a repeated theme over and over and over that we see. But back then, you're right. It was just, if you were the checks and balance, everybody got heard then. Both sides got heard. You came up with a compromise bill that covered what everybody wanted, and all of us were better off when we moved forward. We don't have that today.
No.
Now, when I see Trump, and it was interesting, I was having dinner with some people yesterday, and they are self-admittedly very liberal, very to the left. And we were talking about our kids going to college and what's going on in colleges and my daughter and her friends and their thoughts about things. And then this woman that I love and respect very much, she says to me, well, you know, the country is just so divided. It is so divided right now. And, you know, I got to say, this Trump, he scares me. And I said, well, why does he scare you? What has he done? Has he rounded people up? Has he invaded Alabama? What has he actually done? And she says, well, the attacks he has on the free speech. I mean, he's trying to silence people. Look what he did to CNN. He tried to silence them. That's what the Nazis did. And I got to admit, I knew she was more liberal than she was conservative. But that statement, he's like the Nazis. Do people know what the Nazis were? What they did? Telling an idiot reporter who can't be respectful to everyone else in the room that he can't come back anymore because of his behavior is not squelching anyone's free speech. And it's nothing like the Nazis. But this is what this woman believed. This is what she said. He's like a Nazi, and I'm scared to death of what's going to happen in the future. I said, well, he's been in power for 2 years, and he hasn't, like, come to your house and taken you away or anything. Why are you so afraid? It's the way he talks. It's the things he says. And I think that was very revelatory for me in how probably a lot of people feel because of the media bias against
the
guy.
That's exactly what it is. The news media is very effective because half the population basically believes in what the news media is telling them. And they're making him out to be some kind of fascist zealot. He's the furthest thing from that. Matter of fact, in my opinion, I think he's fighting to keep America a free country. He's fighting America. He's fighting against the whole fascist ideals, as well as the communist ideals. And we spoke about this in the past. They're the same thing. There's a different name for the exact same thing, and that's tyranny. As far as Acosta's concerned, where is the consideration? In the past, the journalists had respect for the presidency. They'd get up, they'd ask a question. They wouldn't get up there and pontificate. They wouldn't get up there and give a lecture to the president and to the people who are listening to the so-called question, rhetorical question. No, they would ask a question and the president would respond. Acosta should be ashamed of himself. Mm-hmm. And for those other news men and women in that room, not to be taken back by the fact that he's hogging time, he's not letting them get their questions in. Who does he think he is? He should have had his credentials revoked, in my opinion.
Right, because CNN wasn't silenced. They could send another reporter. Now, I think the way this is coming, and the court decision that came out is a little confusing to people, because it sounds like the whole thing was freedom of speech. Jim Acosta has freedom of speech to speak to the president, and that was restored by the court. What actually happened has nothing to do with the freedom of speech issue. What this was all about was due process. Because it was a governmental permit, so to speak, for the press pass to go in there, because the government agency gave that to a citizen to come in and speak, and then it was removed without due process. That's like somebody taking your gun permit without you having a court hearing. Just showing up, you can't have a gun anymore, give me your gun permit. You have to have due process. You got to be notified that for whatever reason you shouldn't have a gun. Here's your hearing date. You're going to go to court, and the judge will decide whether you keep it or not. So what they're arguing here is not free speech. What they're arguing is that Acosta and CNN had their permit removed by a government agency, the president, without due process. So the due process is going to be you have to have a set of rules so that you know you're violating them or not. And that's what the president and his people have said. We're going to create a list of requirements to be a press spokesman. And if you violate them, that in and of itself, you've been told what they are. That's your notice. And if you violate them, you can be removed. If there were no laws on speeding, and you raced up the road and a cop pulls you over and hands you a ticket for speeding, you'd say, well, I didn't know that was against the law. There's no law against it. yeah, I just decided you're speeding and you have a ticket. That wouldn't be inappropriate. Once there are laws and you take your driver's license test and they tell you about speeding, you've now been given notice that you can't speed and you get pulled over, you get a ticket. Now you go to court and you hear it. So that's really what that's all about. On Acosta's point, he is grandstanding. He's taking over time. And you're right, Jim. It's no matter how much you disagree with the president, the way they treat him is a reflection of how the left-wing media portray him. He's not worthy of being the president. He's not a real president. He's an animal that grabs women by their private parts. He does not deserve respect. And therefore, you have those reporters like Acosta treat him that way, as though he can interrupt him like he's somebody special. He's a news reporter. That man is the president of the United States. I would not do that to Obama, and I disagreed with all of his policies. I would never stand there and treat the man like that. He is the president of the United States. That's like spitting in your own face. I didn't care for
that. That's why you have a divided country, because half the population is only superficially involved with the whole political rancor and rhetoric that's happening. And just to prove the point, before you even made that little speech about Jim Acosta and why his press pass was revoked, I've been just tacitly listening to it, reading about it. I was against it. And I was offended by the fact that President Trump, I thought, had the right to revoke his press privileges. But the way you described the court and how that there is a due process in this country, and by revoking that press privilege does violate due process, I changed my mind. Mm-hmm. Now I understand. And now I understand, which I didn't realize, why they were making the rules. Because I did read it. It's like, why are they making rules?
Making rules so that you know if you violate them, you're out.
You're out. Exactly.
Now, so, first of all, there's no requirement for the president to hold a press conferences like that. There's nothing that says that in the Constitution. This guy, Trump, has been more open to the press. He even answered Acosta's questions, even though he was arguing with him. He answered his question. There's no rule that says they have to have these press conferences. He could certainly say, you know what, I'm going to take questions from Americans that send them in via email, and I'm going to stand in front of the podium and go, Jim Giordano said, why am I doing this with the caravan? Let me explain to you why. He's still giving the American people stuff. He could require those reporters to submit their questions in writing. He'll read it, or somebody will read it, and then he'll answer it. And if he wants to follow up, he'll point, Jim, you sent me in that question. What did you mean by that? Then you could have a dialogue. He could do anything he wants. The press requirements there are not written in stone anywhere. He does it to inform the people. We have a right to hear what our leaders think. So it's interesting. As far as Acosta goes, when I saw that, I'm saying, okay. So was the guy hostile? He is hostile. Is he a threat to the president? I don't know that he's a threat, a physical threat to the guy. He's not going to go fight with him. And what he did to that young lady who's the intern who was there, and they show you the different speeds of the video. There's no doubt about it. She tried to get the microphone because that's her job. He pulled away. And then when she tried to reach and grab the microphone, he pushed her arm down. He didn't slap her. He didn't punch her. But he just pushed her arm out. No, I'm not giving this up. That's inappropriate behavior. That alone should censure him.
But to call it assault, it's not assault. You know, right. We've all done that before.
Right.
You put your hand up and you hit your wife as you're in the car, as you're talking. It's not assault. It's not something of that nature. And for the press to even talk about it in that fashion,
right?
I think it's absurd.
And in that side, I have to agree. I don't think he assaulted the woman.
No.
But what he did is she was in charge of the microphone. It's not his microphone. The president told him, enough, put the microphone down.
That is correct.
And she went to go retrieve it, which is her job. Acosta should have just simply handed her the microphone and sat down.
Those are the rules of decorum.
Exactly. So now, what else could the president do? Well, if you felt that he was uncomfortable with the way that guy behaved, you could set 7 Secret Service agents, sit right around him, and then don't ask him any questions. Simple as that.
Exactly. Why even call on him?
Why even call on him? I would never call on that guy again. And I would say, I've picked on this newspaper and that newspaper and this TV show. And CNN, if you would like to have questions answered, send me a reporter who can be appropriate in public.
Why is it that in these press conferences, the same network news channels always get the first dibs on the questions?
Mm-hmm.
there are a lot of news networks out there, news agencies and magazines. Why doesn't President Trump just call on some of the lesser known networks and let them get an opportunity to ask a question?
And I think, and I don't know, I'm not in the White House, but what I've heard about this is that the reason you pick on CNN, you pick on Fox, you pick on ABC, NBC, the big ones, they are the big outlets, and your message will get out to the most people when their reporter asks a question. It's definitely going to make the news. If you ask, you know, the Des Moines Register asks a question, they might ask something about something that's pertinent to Des Moines that has no national implication, and therefore no one's going to repeat that question. So they go to the big ones because they are the big ones.
Makes sense.
But you know what? I would certainly go with other agencies, and I would leave him out. He's rude. That was inappropriate. And if they treated Obama like that and it was somebody from Fox, I would say that person shouldn't be there. You do not treat the President of the United States like that. That was just wrong. Decorum, just like you said, it's not right. Okay, so here we are. We're moving through our segment. I think this was great. It was nice to get to talk to you alone for a little bit, Jim. And, you know, for Jack, Rock and Roll Race Car Patterson out there, and, you know, Bill, the Man of Faith Dallas, I know you're listening in, and we miss you guys. But it's nice to have just two of us
here,
isn't it?
Bill's just shopping for a new shirt.
Bill's shopping for a new shirt. And Jack, God knows, he could be racing a motorcycle, a race car, a horse, who knows what he's doing. But I think actually they're having a graduation party for his son who graduated college. And this is the delayed party. And I'm very happy and I'm very proud of him.
How do you think Jack, the race car driver, would have fared through the storm that we recently had here in New Jersey?
Jack would have scared the snow out of the way. Jack would have scared the snow. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for being here in this particular segment. Jim, thanks for sitting here with me. You're my good friend. You have great opinions and you do love America. No matter how contrarian you are, you do love your country. And we can all be happy with that. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in a minute for round three here on Chasing Justice.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Right now, we're going to be talking to the attorney of record here for Chasing Justice, Joe Pangaro Jr., coming to us live from points unknown somewhere in South Jersey. Joe, welcome aboard here to segment three, round three of Chasing Justice and Disorder in the Court.
Dad, thanks for having me back. I appreciate that points unknown introduction. It makes me sound like a 90s bad guy wrestler or something. But I'm very glad to be here, and I always like being on the show.
That's great. And I know I've had people call in and send me texts and emails that say how much they really love Disorder in the Court. So our court system is extremely important. It is one of the baselines for our freedom. We have the government that has to do what it has to do, but the courts are our recourse to justice sometimes. And understanding how the courts work is great. The Disorder in the Court part is when some ridiculous things come up in the court and when people do crazy things that I think everybody finds so interesting. So what do you got for us this week?
Sure, Dad, and going off that point, I think there was a comedian who used to make a joke about, just as a background for people, who used to make a joke about whales getting beached. He said, well, maybe those are the dumb whales. They're smart people, they're stupid people. Maybe they're smart whales and stupid whales. This is kind of the life application of that. There's smart people, stupid people. There are smart lawyers and stupid lawyers. And this is really just, I've got a doozy for you to start. So this guy, Mr. Sharapa, he was being prosecuted by the Department of Justice for possession of cannabis. Now, as you know, a lot of states have made marijuana legal in the last few years, and there's even been some indications that there will be more down the road. So this guy is fighting his case based on the fact that cannabis is legal some places, it should be legal everywhere, the government doesn't have any control over me. So he loses that, obviously. Then he goes up to the Court of Appeals, which, so people know, the Court of Appeals is just below the Supreme Court in terms of importance. And in making his brief, he sends to the Court of Appeals, he mails them pot. He doesn't just, so people get a sense, when you're filing a brief, it's not all electronic, at least not yet. You put your brief on electronically, but then you also mail a copy to the court. So this guy mailed a hard copy of his brief, and he mailed samples of cannabis. And as the court said, as they start their opinion, it says, upon examination of Mr. Sharapa's brief, affixed to each paper is what appear to be samples of cannabis, which may be controlled substances possessed or mailed in violation of federal law. So this guy, actually, they reported him to DOJ for more crimes because it's illegal to mail illegal drugs. And by filing his brief with the court with pot in the brief, he broke another law. So this guy actually wound up getting himself locked up again.
Wow, talk about the system coming back to bite you. So here he is, he's trying to send in a brief about why he shouldn't go to jail, and he sends them pot as samples. What did, is there anything in there about why he would send samples of pot as, why he should not go to jail?
When I read the opinion, the closest I could come is, A, he's crazy, and then, B, I think he honestly didn't occur to him that sending it in would be a violation, and I think pretty much nobody thought to tell him otherwise. But what makes me wonder is when you go to the post office, you have to tell them what's in the packages that you're mailing so they can weigh everything and get proper postage. What did this guy say? Like, oh, I've got a pound and a half of paper and a quarter pound of pot as well. And then they all like, okay, that's going to be four stamps.
Well, I'll tell you, if he sent a quarter pound of pot, you would think that the drug-sniffing dogs that they have in all these facilities would have sniffed that out. I'm thinking maybe he sent a joint. He rolled it up real nice for them and sent each one a joint. Now, as I'm thinking about this, as you're telling me this, I'm saying, what reason could he possibly have come up with the set? Now, I could see if the marijuana was legal, and he, you know, the laws had been changed, and he says there was some discrepancy on the potency of the marijuana or the flavor of the marijuana or the content of seeds or whatever, that he would say, sure, here's my appeal and here's a sample of my marijuana to show it doesn't have these things. But just to send them samples of pot, you know, was he trying to be a funny guy and now he ends up locked up again?
You know what? It may have even been as simple as when you write a brief, you a lot of times, so that the court can reference what's going on, you will attach as exhibit. So if you and I were fighting over a contract and I wanted to sue you for breach of contract, in my brief in my lawsuit, I would say, see attached as exhibit A, the contract. I'm wondering if this guy just said, see attached as exhibit A, the pot that I was arrested for selling.
Right. Here we have some Acapulco gold. We'd like you to review there in chambers and let us know whether I am a good... Sounds to me, Joe, like he needs a good attorney.
Yeah, it certainly sounds that way.
So as a lawyer, okay, and it's amazing to me because lawyers seem to be able to figure common sense out of this nonsense and come up with, you know, something. Well, they're standing there straight-faced and look at the judges with this guy in shackles going, well, Your Honor, he sent this to you for this reason. As an attorney, if you had to defend this guy, what kind of a thing would you even come up with?
Well, here's the old adage in law. When the law is against you, you pound the facts. When the facts are against you, you pound the law. When the facts and the law are against you, you pound the table. So if I had to defend this guy, I would basically just shout until I was told to be quiet, and then I would hope that the prosecutor would take pity on how dumb he was and give him a good plea deal.
Well, you know, now that's funny to me.
Part of the idea is, you know, just like they say, a lawyer doesn't ask a question in court he doesn't know the answer to. You know, you don't let your client, if you can stop it, you don't let your client get to the point of a judgment day of some sort or another unless they have a colorable chance of succeeding. In this case, I say, John, you mailed pot to a judge. You're going to prison. The only chance you have is to take whatever the prosecutor gives, because if you go to court and look at a judge in the eye, you're gone for as long as he can send you. So now, how you really handle that.
That is funny. I could just imagine the scene, though, where here's the attorney banging on the table, screaming and hollering, and the prosecutor, who's also a lawyer, knows what he's doing and knows he has no case left, but he's doing the best he can. And then the defendant go, Your Honor, well, maybe it just was the samples you didn't like. This pot I have here in my pocket might be even better. That's crazy. So let me ask you a serious question, though, Joe. Let's deviate from that for a minute. And let's say when it comes to lawyers and courts, now we see all this, the voting and the nonsense going on down in Florida. And one of the attorneys for, I think it was for the senator from Florida who is losing his seat, he said he brought down an attorney to obviously contest the election. And the attorney said, I'm not here to count the votes. I'm here to win the election. So is that something, I mean, is... Where does the truth matter in here, or what? How do you see that as an attorney to go, hey, I zealously guard my client's interest? Is that the whole idea?
Yeah, and you know what? It's one of those things where you see a lot once you're in law. Some people, there being a disconnect between the lawyers and the rest of society, essentially. And when I hear that, I think, yep, that's correct. That's just an inartful way to say it. The whole way the system functions, it has to function, is that when you have a client, you do everything within the bounds of the law you can to get the best possible outcome for your client as defined by your client. And so he's an election lawyer. There's an election in dispute. He gets hired by one side, and he says, I'm not here to count the votes. I'm here to win the election. The guy on the other side, it's not a good thing to say, but make no mistake about it. The guy on the other side, he better have that mindset as well. Otherwise, he's doing a disservice to his client. But that's also why you see there are a pretty strict series of constantly reviewed and edited and revised ethical conduct rules for attorneys, right. So that even if you're not quote-unquote breaking the law, you can be disbarred. And part of the reason for that is the desire to do a good job representing your client, zealous advocacy, is such a paramount a part of being a lawyer that if we didn't have these rules to rein you in, who knows what would go on with some of these attorneys.
Right.
And yeah, it's really one of those, it's an inartful way for him to explain it, but that is more or less his job. He's got the side. And, you know, you'll see this all the time. You'll even hear, you know, Justice Scalia, for instance, was famous for saying, no good judge waits all of his results. You know, it says, hey, I don't want this side to win, but I'm just doing the law thing. And under the law, these guys are allowed to do what they want. And I think it's a stupid law and it's a bad law, but I still have no power to change it. And lawyers are the same way. You might say, I think my client's wrong. I think he's a bad guy. I think he's a jerk. You would never say any of that out loud, but it doesn't matter because my job is to make sure he has an advocate in front of the court. And it's the judge's job to say, or the jury's job to say, hey, this guy's a liar, or this guy's a bad guy, or this guy's wrong. It's not my job to say it. If I'm hired as his attorney, it's the court's job. That's why there's a system in place.
Right. And you know what? I guess over the years, as I've seen, you know, I've been in courtrooms for my entire career. And it gets frustrating. You say, how could a lawyer defend someone that they know is guilty? But you know what? If you're in that chair, if you're the one in that chair, you want somebody to stand up for you and say what you may not have the ability to say or the background to say or the knowledge to say, where you can pull things out of the law, precedent, things that you would know as an attorney that if I defended myself, there is no way I could protect myself, and I'd want somebody to stand up for me and make my best argument. And we have to look at that because any one of us could end up in the docket, and you want a good attorney.
And the concern, I would say, the real concern is more what's called mob rule, where you don't want someone who's going to be cowed by anything representing you. I'll just take as an example, you know, Justice Kavanaugh. If we just put it up to public opinion, there may have been a very different outcome for him. Now, if you apply that to the criminal law context, you have someone accused of something very bad before a single piece of evidence is introduced. If it's in the community, this is the information, the story, whatever it is, and that guy's mug right up on the newspaper, the entire community is going to want to see the guy go away. They're not going to want to hear the story, you know, of whatever he has to say. And if you're that guy and you're innocent, you want someone on your side who's going to have the opinion, I don't care what everybody's saying. I don't care what everybody thinks. I'm going to work my butt off to get this guy a fair hearing and to make his best possible case.
And you know
what?
That's
kind of where you have to think about it.
I think that's great, and I think that is where, you know, and a lot of people make jokes about lawyers, you know, it's just a thing because of the way the court seems to go sometimes. But I think that's where the nobility of being a lawyer comes from, in that you're there to guard your client. You have a obligation to do the right thing, and it's something that, you know, we can all make fun of, we can all show scorn for when we think the person is guilty and the lawyer stands up and says they're not. But like I said, if any one of us ends up in that chair, we want someone to be our champion and try and do the right thing. So there is nobility in the law, and I think it's one of the guiding principles of our country. So now that we covered some serious stuff, what's the next ridiculous disorder in the court thing you have to talk about today?
All right, so I got, I know some people have said that they like some of the crimes. So I'll go to one of these crimes, because this is what our elected officials are spending our tax dollars doing, ladies and gentlemen. They're all making figures, and this is what they're coming up with. Chapter 7 of the United States Code, Section 8306 to 8313, and Chapter 9 of the Code of Federal Register, Section 93.412D3, Romanet 2C. Are you ready? Everybody wrote that down.
My head is spinning, but go ahead.
There was a lot just to read that out. So imagine how much work went into putting it together. And that is, that rule and code make it a federal crime to keep more than one lot of llamas in a minimum security llama quarantine facility.
Did you say llamas?
Llamas. Llamas.
Is that a big problem somewhere in the country with llamas?
The best part is the extra description. In a minimum security llama quarantine facility.
All right, so these must be dangerous llama of some kind. Now, I know they spit at people, but, you know, what else do they do? Do they are they street robbers, or what do they do, these llama?
I was going to say, well, it's... But there's, I guess you don't want more than one lot of llamas, because everyone knows of the notorious llama gangs that are marauding through the country. So if you get multiple llama lots together.
Are they the llamanarians?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
I said, like, who's quarantining llamas? Who's quarantining that many llamas? And why, if there's a minimum security, there's got to be a maximum security. Why is there a maximum security llama quarantine facility? Why do we have that?
They must be either the very accurate spitting llamas, or they got something else going. Now, my thought now goes to the law enforcement end of that. So say you have a lot, you have two lots of llamas next door to each other, a minimum security and a maximum security, and one of the llamas hops the fence. Who do we call? Who do we call to decipher the llama crime going on? Is that like, hey, I'm Detective Jones of the Llama Police, and I'm here to check your llama papers or something? I don't know.
I think we just wrote Sylvester Stallone's next movie.
It's got to be.
He's out of the business. He's out of the llama quarantine business for 10 years, but then somebody brings him back in for one last job because he's the best.
Hey, I'm telling you right now, I got your llamas over here, and they're in maximum security. Joe, that's great, I appreciate that. It's really funny to hear some of these things. And as a closing note, I was telling somebody the other day, we were talking about the law and how our laws sometimes are outdated, and you got funny things like llama law. I teach all the time, I teach liquor license investigations to the police officers. And most of this law here in New Jersey is based on things that happened after Prohibition. And as I'm reading it out, it starts to give you a lot of descriptions of things. And one of the things it says, you know, certain age people can't work around alcohol. You can be 15 years old as long as you are a hand pin setter in a bowling alley. Now, I don't know the last time you saw a hand pin setter in a bowling alley, but it's just funny that that's still on the books. Some of these laws still exist, and they just don't get updated. Nobody goes in and cleans them out.
And you know, I think it's because it honestly does take time and effort to pull the thing, to pull the laws off the books. But so really what you wind up doing is you just wind up having prosecutors just no longer enforcing certain laws.
Sure.
So, you know, if we heard that our district attorney in our respective towns was going into bowling alleys and busting, you know, 15-year-olds working at the shoe registration place or whatever, we'd be like, why aren't you going after the real criminal? Stop
right.
doing that.
Go after those crazy llama farms. All right. So, Joe, I want to thank you very much for disorder in the court, and thank you for being here on Chasing Justice. Everybody out there in Chasing Justice land, have a great Thanksgiving. We're thankful for all of you. Joe, I'm thankful for you and for Adeline and for Alex and Melissa and Marisa and Jack and all my friends and families and everybody. So listen, have a great Thanksgiving. I'll talk to you later.